Okay, so continuing with Rav Schwab, Mayan Beis HaShoeva, we are on page Tuf Ayin Vav. Okay, this is the very end of the Megillah. V'hayamim ha'ila nizkarim v'nasim b'chol dor v'dor. V'hayamim ha'ila, these days, nizkarim v'nasim are to be remembered and to be celebrated in each and every generation. Mesachas Megillah, the Gemara says in Dafir Chesam at Aleph, kara es ha'megillah al pe lo yatza. How do we know that the Megillah has to be read? Maybe I could just tell the story. So how do you know that Kara al Peh, if you read it by heart, lo yatza, minalan, from where do we know that? Amar Rava, Asya Zechira Zechira. We have a Gezerah Shava of Zechira Zechira. Meaning we have the word Zachur somewhere else, which we know requires reading something. So too we have by the Megillah that it has to be read. So for example, Ksiv Hacha, it says here, V'hayamim ha'ela nizkarim, it says here, the pasuk we just read, in the ninth parak of the Megillah, that these days are nizkarim. Uksiv Hasam, and it says in Parshas B'Shalach, when we first met Amalek, Ksov zos zikaron basefer. So ma lahalan basefer, afkan basefer. It says the Gemara, just as it's very clear in Parshas B'Shalach that we commemorate what Amalek did to us, Basefer, it has to be recorded, a written text. So too, the same thing is true when it comes to the Purim story. Nizkarim implies that it has to be read from written text. Okay, fine. We might the high Zechira Kriyahi, the Gemara goes on to say, well, how do you know Zechira actually means reading it? But it's clear that there has to be some type of text which is used, and he quotes the Yerushalmi in brackets, Yerushalmi Megillah, Nizkarim Bekriya. So explains Rav Schwab where it's underlined. V'hatam shenemar lashon Zechira, v'lo nemar b'feirish lashon Kriya. Why does it refer to the commemorating of the Megillah from a written text as a Zechira? Remember it and continue to perpetuate its memory by reading it from some type of text. So there's a very easy way to say that. It's called reading. Right? Reading implies reading something from a document. So why doesn't the Megillah say that these days are meant to be read? Right? Why not just use the word Kriya? So he explains, Yesh Lomar, Alpi Devei Chazal, Megillah Dav Zayin. Sha'av Esther L'chachamim Kisvuni L'doros V'lo Yiskimu B'tchila. You have to understand that the Esther historically was very true. What do I mean by very controversial? Esther sent a letter to the rabbis asking them, Kisvuni Lidoros, write me down for all generations. In other words, Esther said, I want to be part of Tanakh. How many books are there in Tanakh? There's 24 books of Tanakh. So Esther said, I want to be in Tanakh. Right? Hanukkah didn't make it into Tanakh. You don't have a Hanukkah story in Tanakh. So Esther wanted to be recorded, and the Gemara has a whole discussion about how the rabbis were able to justify the writing of Megillas Esther, that it should be written in Ruach HaKodesh and should be made part of the part of Tanakh. Therefore, Lachain, Kodim Shehushra Ksiva Haisa Megillah Begeder Zechira. Okay, so the first point Rav Schwab says, very simple point, you have to understand, it was not obvious that there was going to be a Kriya Samegillah. Right? Again, the Hanukkah story, we know it from Torah Sheval Peh. True, now Torah Sheval Peh is written down, so you can open up a Gemara Masechet Shabbos and read about Hanukkah. We don't have a real text of Hanukkah. The same thing is true. Megillah was not, it was not obvious that there was going to be a Kriya, Mitoch HaKsav. It was not obvious that there would be a Megillah Esther. In the end, we're very blessed that there is. We're very fortunate that there is. But originally, it was Begeder Zechira. It was originally just something that was going to be perhaps orally transmitted. Okay, so that's the first point. So by calling it a Zechira, it highlights the fact that it was not a given that there would be a Kriya, that there would be a document to read. But the further point, says Rav Schwab, V'yesh lomar od, says in the second paragraph, Sharaikia mitzvahs zachor eis asher asal lecha amalek hu dafcha mitoch ha-sefer v'nirmas b'krak sov zos zikaron ba-sefer. So he says, again, the link between how we commemorate Amalek, where it's very clear that what? That Amalek is mentioned, is remembered by a kriya from a sefer, and yet even there, where it was clear that it's basefer, as the pasuk says, "Ksov zos zikaron basefer," and there, where it says by Amalek very clearly it's a sefer, it still calls it a zechira. V'lachein machmas, last 3 lines, V'lachein machmas hayos kriyas ha-megillah v'toch ha-sefer, gam kein kiyum chiyav zeh shel zechiras ma'isa malik, l'chein nichtava b'lashon nizkarim. What's he saying? He's saying, if you just call Megillah's Esther a kriya, so then you're saying, you're commemorating a story, very important story. But if you call it a zechira, that furthers its link to what? I mean, we're not just connecting it to a malik that's saying, well, it says, you know, zechira over there, and it says zechira over here, so it says sefer over there, so over here it also has to do with the sefer. What Chazal are establishing is by calling Megillah Esther Hayom Elu Nizkarim, we're saying every time we read the Megillah, it's a form of what? Of zechiras amalik. That's the term that we use by amalik. Zachor is asher asal lecha amalik. Remember what amalik did. So if it just called the Megillah Kriya, you say it's just another. It's another piece of our history. It's not just another piece of our history. There's a certain type of memory that we're trying to perpetuate in terms of how we deal with amalik. Zachor is asher asal lecha amalik. Remember what amalik tried to do to you. And therefore, when you read the Megillah, these days are nizkarim. It's part of our continued fight against the Malik every time we read the Megillah. I'll just point out an interesting remez that's found in the Sefer Sifsei Chachamim. Not the Sifsei Chachamim, which is a commentary on Rashi, but there's a Sefer on Shas called Sifsei Chachamim. And he says, what's the gematria of the word basefer? What's the gematria? That Amalek sov zos zikaron basefer. We commemorate Amalek with a sefer. Now, when the Gemara says that Esther says, make me into a book, they said, well, you know, we're only allowed to, Chazal had some Mesorah that we're only allowed to record a Malik in print a certain number of times, so there's a whole discussion, is there room to add Megillas Esther? Can we record another fight against a Malik? It's a very strange discussion, right? But at the end of the day, they decided to write down Esther, and we read Esther as a form of Zichira, Yom Me'ilu Nizkarim. But it's Basefer. What's the gematria of Basefer? 342. Okay? Where do we encounter Amalek in Tanakh? In other words, who is the embodiment of Amalek in Tanakh? Well, it starts with Amalek. Okay. Starts with Amalek. And then, of course, we find that when Amalek is being fought against in the Nevi'im, And Shaul HaMelech has Rachmanis on who? What was the king of Amalek's name? I don't remember his name. Close. Agag. Aleph Gimel Gimel. Agag.
That's my second guess.
Okay. And then, of course, in the Purim story, how does Amalek present itself? Haman. Says it's Sifsei Chacham. What's the gematria of Amalek plus Agag plus Haman? The three primary encounters with Amalek. So Amalek is 240. Agag is, Aleph Gimel Gimel is Tanisimon, 7. And Haman's 95. So what do you got? No, what do you got? 240,
94. I mean
240. 240,
7, and 95.
So
795
is 102.
No, it's 332.
No, it's 342.
No, you just said
what are you guys
340
saying?
340
plus 95 is
335. Yeah,
plus 7.
Plus Agag. No, plus 7. 342. So that's Basefer. That's Gematria Basefer. Right? So, Ksov Zos Zikaron Basefer. Right? Write down the story of Amalek, Basefer. Right? So, what does it mean to record the story of Amalek? Well, there's three major encounters with Amalek. There's Amalek, there's Agag, Melech Amalek, and then there's Haman, who embodies Amalek. So 342 is the gematria of our three main enemies. But that's something we have to realize. When we read Megillas Esther, I think the point Rav Schwab is trying to emphasize here is that, again, you can't look at Megillas Esther, the reading of Megillas Esther, as just, you know, another piece of Jewish history. Every time we read it, we remind ourselves of the evil of Amalek, and we rededicate ourselves not just to, okay, so once upon a time, the Jews were in danger and we were saved. We're rededicating ourselves. Oh, again, why is the Torah obsessed with remembering Amalek? Move past it already, you know, get over it. We have a very strange relationship with Amalek. On the one hand, we're erasing Amalek. On the other hand, we're perpetuating that memory. I always say that after I was sick a couple of years ago, having gone through like a serious illness, you like understand better our relationship with Amalek. And I once spoke to a good friend of mine who had cancer, And he totally understood what I was saying. Like we both like finished each other's sentence as we were saying it. Because on the one hand, it's the scary, like you want to forget it so badly. You want to pretend it never happened and just live your life and enjoy your life. On the other hand, you feel an obligation to live with what you went through as a way of appreciating life more. So on the one hand, like, you know, when your body has poisonous cells, you want to just kill them and get back to healthy living. You don't want to kind of let that trauma, let it go. At the same time, it challenges you to live more meaningfully. So that's sort of our relationship with a malik. On the one hand, erase a malik, destroy a malik, right? Remove every last shred of a malik, but remember a malik. So are we getting rid of it or are we holding on to it? And that's a very delicate balance. But that's what we're achieving every time we read the Megillah. It's nizkarim. It's a form of zechiras a malik. It's a remembering the horrible oppression that a malik inflicted upon us. Okay, so that was a nice insight. Again, just to better understand the lashon of the pasuk and to read into the Gemara a little bit deeper. Okay? Now, here's something we said we were going to get to last week, so let's get to it now. Vatichtov Esther Hamalcha Malka Bas Avichail, Mordechai Yehudi, as called Tokef. Mordechai and Esther recorded all of the Tokef. Interesting lashon. All of the strength. They recorded all of the literally strength. Tokef is the strength. What does that mean? Okay, we're not going to discuss exactly what was the strength. The Gemara discusses that. The Gemara says, what was the strongest part of the Megillah? Like, where's the turning point of the Megillah? And it has nafgaminas in terms of how much of the Megillah do you need to read to fulfill your obligation. But says Rav Schwab, I'm interested in the term Esther Hamalka. Why am I interested in the term Esther Hamalka? Very, very interesting question. Never heard this question before. Eza kavod yesh la b'malcha zu. Why would we want to perpetuate the name Esther Hamalka? The fact that she was the wife of Ahasuerus is the most embarrassing thing for her. She was held hostage in the palace. It's not a David Hamelech makes sense to us. That's a sign of honor. He's a Melech B'Yisrael. He helped move Klal Yisrael forward to bring Kvod Shemayim, to make a difference in the world. But Esther Hamalka, why would we call her Hamalka? It's so degrading to her. There's a halacha. You look in the Chafetz Chaim, Shmiras Halasha, and the Chafetz Chaim says, you're not allowed to remind the Baal Tshuva of their past. So if you see a person who's a sincere Eved Hashem, you can't say, oh, remember like before you went to Isha Torah that summer? Remember what we did the summer before that? When we were still in Binghamton together? You're not allowed to do that. It's horribly embarrassing. Let the person move on with his life. So we call her Esther Hamalka. Seems so degraded. She was not proud of being the Malka of Achashverosh. Very strong question. No, it's a good question. That was a very good question. O tzarach bir masha amru chazal. Furthermore, we have to ask. The Medrash says, the famous Medrash, that in the Zchus of the 127 years of Sarah, Shabizchus kuf chav zayin shana shel Sarah imenu b'li chet, the fact that Sarah lived 127 righteous years, Zachsa Esther Limloch al Kufchav Zayin Medina. Esther became queen over 127 provinces. Again, Vikosha, Kanish Kaleel, the same question repeats itself. Sharei Kola Malchus Azos Haisa Etzla Inyan Shal Ones Vitzar. So you're just making her even more the queen of Achashverosh, right? But this is not a covet to her that she ruled over alongside Achashverosh, the whole civilized world. Ve'eiza Zuchus Yeshkan. What does the Medrash use? Bizchus, kufchav zayin, shana of Sarah, zochza Esther, you were zocha to be Achashverosh's prisoner, and to help him to rule over the world, which included the horrible oppression of your people. Yeah?
I don't know if I just imagine Esther and like Sarah is like a Gilgal, like another Esther.
There are very strong connections. I don't know if we ever said that a Gilgal, per se, of Sarah. But clearly Chazal are drawing this connection between them. There's a lot there in terms of similar messages. I don't know if I ever saw that Esther is a Gilgal of Sarah. I don't know if in the Kisei Arizal it says that she was a Gilgal of Sarah. Then I'm not sure. Yeah?
Just to hop off what saying, what's it called? Whenever we see kind of like a repetitive theme or like a repetitive storyline,
right?
Do we assume it's a Gilgal?
Not necessarily. Not necessarily. I mean, we have a general principle of Maisa Avosim and Labanim, right? There's always going to be common themes that repeat itself throughout Jewish history.
Like Avram and Yaakov.
To say it's a Gilgal, you know, you kind of have to be the Arizal and have a Chavrusa with Eliyahu HaNavi to... I mean, we could suggest things, but that's, you know, those are just suggestions. Right? We know that Mordechai is a Gilgal of Moshe Rabbeinu. And we know that from the Svarim. I mean, we know it from the Svarim as much as we know anything.
Why is Moshe Rabbeinu the Gilgal?
That's a good question. Okay. So some of that goes back to our discussion about Gilgal a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's very interesting.
Okay, but we don't necessarily know that Esther and that Esther was the Gilgal of Sarah. But there's a lot in this Medrash. Clearly, the fact that Chazal thought to, in quotations, randomly connect 127 years of Sarah's life to the fact that Esther was queen of 127 provinces is noteworthy. But again, Rosh Hashanah is bothered more by the fact that it calls it a schus. What's the schus? It's not a schus. Gam yesh levar davar zesh shematzinu shesara haisa doma leEsther b'mashashteya nilkechu lebeis hamelech ba'ones halo davarho. To further highlight the common ground between Esther and Sarah is the fact that Sarah was also taken hostage. Right? When Avram was traveling and he's trying to protect Sarah, tell him you're my sister, she still ends up in the house of foreign kings. She's still a hostage to Avimelech. Not so pashut to be in the shoes that Sarah was in and Esther was in. So what's the schos here? So let's ask another question that was raised last week. Shahamelech Daryavash. That Daryavash, who was the Melech Achare Achashverosh, Nikra Daryavash ben Esther. Daryavash, the son of Esther. V'im Hayu ben Esther, Hayu lo din Yisrael. If your mother's Jewish, that makes you Jewish. Was Darius a Jewish king? Daryavash. The Gemara tells in Rosh Hashanah that Daryavash was treated as a non-Jewish king. So was Daryavash the biological son of Esther or not? And the question gets stronger, of course, and that's why we raised it last week, because we learned last week that whenever Achashverosh would try to be intimate with Esther, what does the Zohar say?
Wasn't her.
Right, it wasn't really her, it was a shade. Female shade. V'yesh lomar al pi hamuva b'shem hazar ha-kadosh. Sheme olam lo ba Achashverosh al Esther. That Achashverosh never actually had relations with Esther. El esheshida nizdam nalo. But every time Achashverosh wanted to be intimate with Esther, HaKadosh Baruch Hu protected the righteous Esther and replaced her with what? With some type of female shame. Ulefiza yesh lomar. So if that's true, so who exactly is Daryavash? Daryavash lo nolad me Esther klal. If that's true, then Daryavash is not at all the biological child of Esther. Aval hi gidalto ki imo. Now, who his mother was, Schwab's not going to suggest at the moment. But what is clear to us is Daryavash is sometimes referred to as Daryavash ben Esther. So how do you explain that if he's not the biological child of Esther? So says Schwab, that's not a problem. If someone raises someone else, right? So it's very reasonable that they would call or consider that person the mother, and that person should be considered the mother in the sense that they were responsible for their upbringing. So Esther raised Daryavash. Sharei Achashverosh meis shana achas acharei meis apurim kamavur b'seder olam. If we look in the Seder Olam, which is a book of chronology of and history of Jewish history, so it says there that Achashverosh died a year after the Purim story, which means Esther raised Daryavash. V'lachein gam k'shedaryavash huchter lios melech. Now Rashwab pivots to make his point. Rashwab says, if that's true, that Esther is the one who was educating Daryavash, who was not actually her biological son, and she was the one who was, so to speak, behind the scenes directing Daryavash in his decision-making in terms of molding his hashkafa, so what do we know about Daryavash? We know that Daryavash was instrumental in allowing Klal Yisrael to return to build Bayis Sheni. So in a certain sense, he says, behind the scenes, how you called, again, how you, where it's underlined, how you called Direi HaMalchus Nechtochem Alpia L'Rabos Binyan Bayasheni. That means Esther, using Daryavash, so to speak, as her mouthpiece, was actually the one orchestrating the building of Bayasheni. The same way that we find, he says, Kamo Shehaya Eitzel Yosef B'Mitzrayim V'Yasimeni La'av L'Paro. Right? That Yosef is the one who's operating through Paro. So Daryavash is really operating as just the mouthpiece of Esther. So therefore, va'oz nasis la Esther hamalka. So Why is Esther called a Malka? In what sense? Imkein ha-tawar shal Esther ha-Malka nizkar b'kasuv. Shu tawar shal kavod. Why refer to her as Queen Esther? Where's the honor in that? Shayach le-tkufa zo shal achar misas Achashverosh. Of course, when she was married to Achashverosh, there's no joy in that Malchus. But the fact that Esther was able, behind the scenes, to renegotiate the return of Klal Yisrael to Yerushalayim and the building of Bayis Sheni, that was her Malchus. That was when Esther was really the Malka. Ula Malchus zu, al kuf chav zayin medina, al golis Yisrael mefuzaris. Mefuzaris besocha, and zachsa bezchus, kuf chav zayin shanim shal sari menu belichet. And it was in the zchus of Sarah's righteousness that Esther was zocha to what? To become truly a Malka over the entire world, which would allow her to bring the Jews back from their gullus to Yerushalayim to build Bayis Sheni. Why do I even need to make the connection to Sarah? Why was Sarah called Sarah? Good luck today. Why was Sarah called Sarah? He says, the Gemara says, Shenikri Sarah al shem sheyatsu mimenu malachim. What does Sarah mean? Sarah means nobility. She's called Sarah because kings come from her. Right? As the Pasuk says in Lech Lecha very clearly, Malche Amim Mimena Yihiyu. She's going to be the mother of kings. That's what the word Sarah means. Sarara means what? Authority. Nobility. That's what the very word means. So of course there's a link between Esther and Sarah. The same way that Sarah was what? In a certain sense, the mother of all Malchus. So too, Esther, Hamalka, also became the mother of Malchus in a very significant way. V'koach Hamalchus b'Yisrael nimshach mimena. Okay, turning the page, last line on the page. Umash nilkechu shtei in lebeis haMelech, gam Sarah v'gam Esther. Right? Why was it that Esther and Sarah were taken? How could these righteous women be taken again to the palace of foreign kings? Lahoros says Rosh Hashanah shebe'em es shayichus hein lemalchus. Right? Why was Esther taken? Why was Sarah taken? According to again our tradition, now we're saying neither of them was actually taken advantage of. Hashem protected Sarah that she should never be violated, and Hashem protected Esther that she should never be violated. So yes, the experience, of course, of being taken to the Beis HaMalchus of a foreign king is very jarring. But in both cases, it's sort of what was Megala, the Torah is being Megala to us, that they both had a Sheichas to Malchus, to an Emistic Malchus. That Sarah would be the mother of kings who would come from her, and Esther would be the one, after Achashverosh is out of the way, to actually use Daryavesh as a tool to bring Klal Yisrael back to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay? So that's interesting to think that Esther's Malchus is not really, of course not her life under Achashverosh. But if Achashverosh, according to Seder Olam, died 1 year after the Purim story, Esther was able to then be a true Malka in a way that helped Klal Yisrael. Okay? Okay, this next piece, you have to understand in the context of a little bit of who Rav Schwab was. Right? You've met Rav Schwab before on Tisha B'Av. Anyone know where you've met Rav Schwab on Tisha B'Av? Where have you met Rav Schwab on Tisha B'Av? What do I mean by that? At the end of the kinos, we have two kinos written by two Gedolei Olam to commemorate the Chorban of Europe, the Holocaust. One was written by the Bava Rebbe, and the other one was written by Rav Schwab. Okay? So you have to understand Rav Schwab's position in history and how many people probably he was supporting, so to speak, after the war in terms of the emotional weight. I mean, to have the courage to write a kina, to try to express in some poetic form the pain of 6 million Jews is not a small thing. That really shines through, or bleeds through, I guess, for lack of a better word, in this next piece. Right? Because what do we say? Oru Haman Asher Bikesh La'avdi. Cursed is Haman who wanted to destroy Klal Yisrael. Baruch Mordechai HaYehudi. Right? Like we sing after the Megillah. Meseches Megillah Dav Zayin Amud Beis Mechayiv Inish L'Besumei B'Puraya Ad L'Yalda Ben Oru Haman L'Varach Mordechai. Of course, Rava teaches us in Meseches Megillah, a person should drink on Purim until the point that he doesn't know the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. Nishalti Harei Shneim Olim B'Kana Echad. So I was asked, right, is it not one and the same? Sharei kisha tzadikim misbarachim az nofim harishan. Ukish miskalkel haman harei Mordechai kam. Right? Meaning, are the two not directly connected? That when Haman falls, Mordechai rises. When Mordechai rises, Haman falls. V'lo tzarech lebesume k'dei lahakir she'en hevdel bein barach Mordechai la'ar Haman. So why do I need to drink to try in some ways to not know the difference between Arur Haman LeBarach Mordechai? Again, it's not the way he's understanding it. It's not that I'm supposed to say, you know, Barach Haman, which is how some deeper svarim explain this idea, whatever that means, right? But I'm supposed to drink to the point that I realize that I don't realize the difference between cursed is Haman and blessed is Mordechai. So says Rosh Hashanah, right now I realize the difference between blessed is Haman and cursed is Mordechai. I mean, I understand the relationship that they have one to the other. When one rises, the other one falls. Right, so what exactly are we trying to achieve on Purim through the drinking of Purim? So says Rav Schwab, V'ulai shehinei b'sinas harishayim margish kol echad ve'echad sina pratis laharasha. Why are we so angry? Why are we so angry at Haman? Is it about us as individuals? Is it about Hashem? If a Jew is angry after the Holocaust, and you hate Hitler, understandably so. So why do you hate Hitler? You hate Hitler because of what he did to the Jewish people? You hate Hitler because Hitler murdered your parents? How personal is your hatred towards the anti-Semite? And how general is your hatred? So says Rav Schwab, when it comes to hating Rishayim, a person feels an individual and a personal, what? A sinah pratis, an individual and personal hatred to the Rasha. Sharei b'chol dor v'dor owned malenu l'chaloseinu. Because in every generation, I personally feel threatened. I personally feel threatened. The fact that there ever was a Haman, I'm scared. I'm scared to raise my children in a world where there's anti-Semitism. I'm scared what, God forbid, could happen to any of us. Ve'eich lo yachem levav ha'ish ha'yisraeli linkom nikmas aviv v'imo. Ve'nikmas acheinu b'nei Yisrael and asunu batzar. So how could we as Jews not want to get revenge? Right? How could we not want to fight back? How could our hearts, he says, not be warmed to want to get revenge for what was done to our parents, to our mothers, to our fathers, to our brothers, the pain that we've gone through? Ve'im kein, and if that's true, so as Jews who want to do things for the most right reasons, we have a problem. Because really, we're supposed to hate the enemies of the Jewish people because they're the enemies of God, not the enemies of us as human beings who feel threatened wearing our yarmulke in France. It's supposed to be about what? The hatred of the Jewish God, about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'im kein sin aso eina kula b'chinas misanecha Hashem esna. Our sinna is not entirely an expression of what it says in Tehillim, that Hashem, I hate the ones who you hate, right? Or I hate the ones who hate you. Elamahula gam b'sinaso ha-pratis, but there's an element of our personal vengeance involved. Amnam lo matzo inyan zeh lagabe avas ha-tzadikim, but when it comes to loving tzadikim, maybe it's much easier to love a tzadik lishma than it is to hate a rasha lishma. You hear? It's possible to love the tzaddik because the tzaddik is the one who what? Who is my connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He deepens my connection directly to Hashem. So maybe it's easier for me to see the tzaddik as what? As a stepping stone to my relationship with Hashem, and not to see the tzaddik as something independent of Hashem. Right? The Rasha, he hurt me so badly, I hate him on a personal level. It's not just about he waged a battle against God. Right? When a person drinks more than he's accustomed to, says Rav Schwab. Again, Rav Schwab was not the type, I don't think, to get totally, completely drunk on par. Tzadikim had different halagos. Rav Schwab, I don't think, probably, he's writing it this way, what he did. He drank more than he was accustomed to. I don't think Rabbanim, you know, Hasidic and not, drank in different ways. So, you know, if you know anything about kind of the Breuer's community, they're probably not like the drunkenest, most drunken community on Purim, I would guess. I don't know. I'm assuming, but I think it's probably correct. So when a person drinks more than they're accustomed to, haray yayin yismach levav enosh. So wine brings joy to the heart. Ve'eno doi klal v'hu merutza makol. So when a person drinks, right, it puts you in a good mood, to the point that you're just like you're okay with things that you wouldn't normally be okay with. So the guy who usually you don't like at all, the guy who rubs you the wrong way in shul, a fellow Jew, let's say, you see him on Purim, all of a sudden you give him a big hug. Why? Because it's just different on Purim. The wine allows a person to be merutza in makol. I'm good with everyone. Adilo yalda bein ar haman levarach Mordechai. If normally I'm so angry at Haman because it's a personal vendetta that I feel towards Haman, when I drink on Purim, he says, oz yeha ar haman rak machmas ove Hashem sinura. It becomes easier for me to hate Haman for the right reasons. To hate Haman because those who love Hashem despise evil. Kamo habarach Mordechai. I want to, right, again, I want to move the Ar Haman closer to the Baruch Mordechai. What does that mean? Again, Baruch Mordechai is easier to achieve a state of Lishma. Ar Haman is hard to do Lishma because I hate Haman personally. But when a person drinks, right, I'm able to maybe be a little less angry as a person, and I'm able to maybe hate Haman for more of the right reason. So the same way that the Baruch Mordechai is Machmas Avas Hashem, so hopefully the line that separates the Ar Haman and the Baruch Mordechai get a little bit closer together. It's a deep idea. It's a hard idea also. And Lamaisa, I don't know if it's entirely true. I don't know if it's so easy to love the Tzaddik. Simply, right? I love the Tzaddik. I also love the Tzaddik. I feel a personal connection to the Tzaddik and I love the Tzaddik. Do I love the Tzaddik only because he brings me closer to Hashem? I love her Weinberger because he brings me closer to Hashem. That's true. But I also love her Weinberger because I love her Weinberger. There's an element of personal connection to a person. So I don't know if it's as easy as Rav Schwab is making it sound, but I think he's certainly correct. When it comes to hate evil, Lishma is not easy. For Pinchas to get up and to put a spear through Cosby and Zimri and to do it for the right reason, Knoi and Pogenbo, to be a, you know, Knoi, Shem Shemayim, to be able to say, Oave Hashem Sinura, that I'm really doing this for God and not because I personally want to take revenge, is very hard. But on Purim, through the drinking, maybe it's easier for us to achieve it. Okay, and the final piece, Rav Schwab has just an interesting question. In the Nusach of Al Hanisim. Yeah. Visalu Osov Ezbanov Al Ha'itz. We say in recounting the Purim story, right, in our tefillos, we say, he and his children were hanged from the tree. If you look at one of the Aramaic translations of the Megillah, it says what? That Haman and his children were hanged on the tree at the same time. Let's think for a second. When was Haman actually killed? Got to know the story a little bit. When was Haman actually killed? Right. Haman was killed on Pesach, right? We actually say it in one of the songs at the end of the Haggadah on the second night of Pesach. Yeah? Va'af shetalu es Haman b'Pesach. Even though, says Rav Schwab, Haman was actually killed on Pesach, because again, in Nisan, that's when the party was. That's when Esther finished off Haman. And then what? They had to wait almost a full year till they battled it out on Adar, fighting for their lives. So Haman was killed like a year earlier. When did they kill Haman's children? In the battle, in Adar. Yeah, Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, El, Tishrei, Cheshvan, Kislev, Teves, Shvat, others. A year later. From the time that Esther revealed to Ahasuerus, someone wants to kill my people. Who is it? It's Haman. Good, go kill Haman. So Haman was on the gallows. So, but when did Haman send the letters that the Jews should be killed in Adar? So from Nisan to Adar is a full year away. So what does it mean if Haman was hanged on the gallows on Pesach, ve'ez b'nei Haman b'yudal adar, and the children of Haman were sent, what, to the gallows in yudal adar. So what does it mean, v'talu osov ve'ez b'nav aleitz? What does it mean, Haman and his children were both hanging from the gallows? Did they leave Haman hanging for an entire year? It's interesting to think about. Tzarach lomar, says Rav Schwab, oshen nishar taloi ad Purim. One possibility is that, yes, Haman was left hanging for a year. Which again, I'll leave it to our Reuben scene to figure out what the meaning behind all these things. But yeah, okay, very interesting that they allowed Haman to be displayed for a year. Oh, and this may be even more interesting, Shechazru v'talu osav, v'tzarachiyah. Maybe after Haman was hanged, They took him down, and when the Jews fought for their lives and killed Haman's sons, once again they hung Haman with his 10 sons. They hung him up again. All right, where was he in the interim? Right. Also, very interesting. But more than that, he says, let's go a step further, because there's another, again, the tefillos are written very precisely. So let's go one step further. Let's go back to Chanukah and look at Moos Tzur. Because if you read the paragraph in Moos Tzur about Purim, you also have some Purim questions. O Tzarechi and Masha Omer v'piot Moos Tzur, Rov Banov v'kinyanov, Al Ha'etz Talisa. Yeah? Rov Banov, the majority of his children, and his possessions were what? Were hung Al Ha'etz. Really? What does that mean? Mahim kinyanov shetal al eitz, or the kinyanov of Haman that were hanging from the gallows. What did they do? They took his car and they hung it up. They took his house. They took what? They took his. What did they take? What did they take? No, I don't want to try to say a pshat. Just think about that line for a second. Rov banav the kinyanov al ha'etz talisa. First of all, why rov banav? Okay. But what kinyanim did they hang on the tree, and why would they hang them? So Schwab says, I'm not sure. Ulai yesh lomar shinei ksiv bayomahu nasan hamelech achashverosh la'esther amalkas beis Haman. What happened after Haman was defeated? Who got Haman's stuff? Mordechai and Esther. The house of Haman was transferred, right, to Mordechai and Esther. V'hem kein lo hayu l'haman shum kinyanim chutz mibanov. V'hem hayu kinyanov. It's arachia. Right? So is that what it's saying in the piyut? Rov banov v'kinyanov? Because all he was left, that the Python's way of saying his children, which were all that he had left in terms of his possessions, so to speak, were sent to the gallows. It says Rishwab tzarachia. And look in the Siddur of Shimshon Rafal Hirsch, where maybe you'll have some further information on this. I did not have a chance to look that up, so I do not know what it says there. Right? I would say like this. There's a famous Gemara in Chulin. Again, I'm just a little bit thinking out loud, but I think it's a decent shot. Right? The Gemara in Chulin says, where is there a hint to Esther in the Torah? Where is there a hint to Mordechai in the Torah? Where is there a hint to Haman in the Torah? Where is Haman hinted to in the Torah? Hamin ha'etz. What's the context of that pasuk? Back in Bereishis, when Hashem says to Adam and Chava, Hamin ha'etz, from the tree that I commanded you not to eat, did you eat? Question mark. Right? Hashem says, Adam, Chava, I know what you've been up to. Hamin ha'etz, did you eat? Hamin ha'etz, spelled hey, mem, nun, Haman. So Gemara says, look, it's a hint to Haman in the Torah. So why is Haman hinted to? Why is Haman hinted to by the eitz? Why is Haman hinted to by the Eitz Hadas in Gan Eden? Who has a piece? Rav Kugler has a whole piece? Okay. Yeah, what does he say? I thought Rav Aaron Cutler said. Another say it also. Could be Rav Kugler says a similar thing. A lot of people say this, but I first read it from Rav Aaron Cutler, so I'll say it in his name. Rav Aaron Cutler, founding Rosh Yeshiva of Lakewood, said the following. He said, what happened in Gan Eden? How did they mess up? They had everything. How could they not control themselves not to eat from this one tree? But you see, sometimes a person says, what? I need everything. You have 99%. You have 99%. You're living in Gan Eden. You hear what the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, well, you have creatures feeding you, you know, around the clock, all you can eat barbecue and the finest wine, as the Gemara says. Literally, the animals were servants to Adam and Chava. The finest delicacies. And you couldn't resist that tree? But that's exactly what happened to Haman. Haman had all the power in the world. There's just one Jew who just won't bow down to him. And he was prepared to lose everything because of that one thing. Instead of focusing on the 99% he had, he focused on the 1% he didn't have. That destroyed him. So maybe, Rov Banov V'Kinyanov, Haman, you had so many children. You had so many possessions. Right? Al Ha'etz Talisa. What does it mean, Al Ha'etz? What does it mean, Al Ha'etz Talisa? Not they were physically hanged from the gallows. What can it mean more allegorically? Right. Whatever happened to you is taloi, it's hanging off of what happened by the eitz, by the eitz, al ha'etz talisa. It's all connected back to that eitz, the same thing. You fell into the same trap that Adam and Chava fell into at the beginning of time. which is saying, yeah, I have a lot of kids and a lot of possessions. Yeah, but there's still a Mordechai. That but always destroys people. Instead of appreciating what you have, focusing on what you don't have. So that's Al Ha'etz Halisa. You want to understand what happened to Haman? It's all Talway. It's all hanging off of that tree. It's all that same human impulse and inability to be satisfied with what you have. That's why Purim is such a zman of simcha. Eizu asher ha-sameach b'chalko. Simcha is being sameach b'chalko. It's being happy with what you have. And that's maybe part of the reason why the Purim story doesn't end perfectly. The Jews are not like totally good when the Purim story is over. Esther on a personal level is ruined. In terms of her personal life, she's ruined. She doesn't get to go happily back to Mordechai. We're trying to explain Esther Amalka, and she's in a position of authority to help Klai. So on a personal level, she's destroyed. From the time she went to Ahasuerus, she's ruined. She's ushered to her husband. Even with the shade, it was not a happy ending for Esther. The postscript of, you know, of Purim is a very sad story. But maybe that's part of the challenge. Eizu Asher Sameach B'chalko means to be able to rejoice in what's good, even though it's far from perfect. Even though it's far from perfect. Okay, so let's learn, actually, let's now do a little piece from Rav Kluger, for those who want to stick around for a couple more minutes. I want to do this piece from Rav Kluger, which maybe will be...